This is a production of Cornell University.
Good evening. It's 5:35 and we'll call the meeting to order. This is the fifth meeting of the GPSA for this semester. Thank you to everyone for coming out. We have an exciting meeting today. We'll have President Skorton joining us a little bit later, as I'm sure you've seen. So we will start off with attendance of voting members. So, okay, David Bunk, John DeCastro, Alex Moore, Michaela, Tim Sorg, Christine Yap, Liz Newberry, Liz Murnane, Max Chen, and Ann Bybee has a event out of town, so she is absent. And then Giovanna Daines, Adrian Powell, Serena Shea, Monet Dima, I am here. Asma,
I'm here.
And Stephanie Seller.
Here.
Okay, perfect. Okay, next on our agenda, we will approve the minutes. So the minutes were printed and should have been distributed. Does anyone have any corrections to the minutes as printed?
I think in five or open forum, the associate should be the Society for Asian American Graduate
TAGA.
I'm sorry. Do you want to just spell it out so they could just get it back for them?
Society for Asian American.
Okay, so does anyone have any objections to correcting that to the Society for Asian American Graduate Affairs? Seeing none, the correction will be made. Are there any other corrections?
Also, the previous line, it should be the Graduate Professional Women's Network, not the Association for Graduate Professional Women, GP Women N.
Okay, so
it's called the Graduate Professional Women's Network is the name of the organization.
Does anyone have any objections to making the change to Graduate Professional Women's Network? Seeing none, the correction will be made. Any other corrections? If not, are there any objections to approving the minutes as corrected? Seeing none, the minutes are approved as corrected. Okay, now we're going to go into reports of our officers and committees. So starting off with the executive committee, I had a chance to meet with Student Services last week, and they launched the Ask Ezra page this year. And so this is a new kind of a new site to find quick answers. And they're looking for input from students, graduate and undergraduate. And we're looking to get them into a meeting sometime probably in the next 2 to 3 meetings. But wanted to be aware that this tool is out there. And also, if you have suggestions, if you've used it, please send them my way, and I will pass them along. But again, we're looking to get them in soon, so hopefully we'll be able to have them come in and you can share your thoughts here. And then a quick announcement on just programs coming up this week, so are coming up soon. So transitions, November 5th, 4 to 5:30 at MAN, How to Combat Stress. And then perspectives, Tuesday, November 12th, 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. at MAN, Positive Thinking Equals Positive Productivity, Part 2. And so at both of these events, they serve food as well. But two great programs to take advantage of. And again, I've stressed this before, but one last time, transitions is for newer students, and perspectives is for all graduate students.
Okay, and so our committee positions are vacant, are the same as last time. Please contact me if you're interested or you'd like to nominate anyone. I'll probably send around to a list of our members all the like short descriptions of what these are, so you can forward them onto your field, because understandably, people may not know, so it's hard to promote them. Of course, it's a busy time of year, so we'll probably, it's understandable if we don't fill them now, but we'd like to have you bear these in mind, because a lot of them are quite important.
Okay. Thank you, Christine. Okay, so appropriations? Yes. And no updates from the committee? Okay, well, you're on the program, so, yeah. You'll have plenty of updates later. And then communications.
Hi, everyone. I'm a law study. I, along with your chose to be here today. I'm the co-chair for the communications committee. Data Western has stepped down. So we've been meeting and we have some great ideas to promote the presence of GCSA, boosted image, also among graduate students, build awareness. So in the coming meetings, we'll be presenting those ideas that will hopefully be a bit more solidified then. And I will also, right now, there is an important script at the live meeting. So if you haven't already, and if you do have Twitter, keep an eye out to UGCSA.
Thank you. And Finance Commission? Daniel? Okay. Programming Board? Oh, Ann isn't here. She's out of town.
So the zombie search went really well. Thank you to all of you for participating. We also made it to our help page. The robot was really well attended, so thank you all for going there. It was really fun. And there were two professors who stayed talking about it. It was very, very nice. So I'm glad you went there and supported the event. It was a collaborative event, but it was really successful. On November 9th, which is a Saturday, the Cornell Outdoor Education will guide you through climbing, but if you want to learn about it, we have 15 stages, so for grad students to go for free, take this course. So please, if you're interested or if anybody in your field is interested, please email to UGCSB. And remember, normally you have to pay, so the program board is supporting, and this is our plan for the wellness and also for what time? I don't know. But you know, if you use GPS to be very interested, and we'll work with you. And the last thing is that on November 14th, which is next Friday, we will have a grad night out, and it will be at Monday. No, I'm sorry, that is on November 14th, we have an inter-school mixer, but we have our meetings on Monday, so we haven't decided the groups we're going to mix. But if you think your department wants to mix or your field wants to mix, please send us an email and I will include you in the upcoming
meeting. Thank you, Giovanna. And Franny, advocacy? Okay, no updates. Thank you, Franny. Faculty awards, Adrian?
No.
Okay. And Chavez, diversity and international students?
So we met last Monday. We had a really good turnout. Great discussion. So some of the updates for this committee was that to solidify the date, November 20th will be our Let's Talk About Diversity in a series of discussions. We've not solidified the place just yet. We're waiting on confirmation from Coach Fox. So it'll be November 20th. Also, we got a chance to, this is on the subject of disparity between the number of minority and underrepresented and faculty at Cornell, as school as well as grad school, as well as international background. And to discuss this with us, we actually contacted Provost Levite, who's the Associate Vice Provost for Faculty Development and Diversity. And she's more excited to share with us Cornell's plan for the future and try to tackle some of these issues. So we're waiting on a confirmed date to meet with her. But I think it's good progress because we can all be well informed on this issue in order to assess what the next steps will be. Also, we created a Facebook page, so now you can go on Facebook. Cornell Diversity and International Student Resource. So this is a page where all graduate student groups, whether from any background, can it's open to the public where everyone can share different resources. So current events, initiatives, where to go for a barbershop. It belongs to the community. So this has been pretty active. We already got 35 members as of this morning. So, and also, ISSO orientation. So, a lot of discussion was around, so orientation is already established, and the group agreed upon is we did a lot of issues that we were discussing and we'd like to tackle dealing with international student engagement and cultural awareness. Could be, you could use a model that's already, you know, up and going, and which is the orientation. So we're getting to reach out and talk to ISSO about how we can enhance our partner with them on normal issues. So, and I think that's it.
Thank you, Shabbat. Okay, at this time we're going to go into our presentations for today. So first up, we have the Appropriations Committee, and Bill is out of town, so he's not able to present today, but his committee is here, and they've been working so hard to create the recommendations for the student activity fee. And so I'm going to have them come up, and while they're coming up, I'll explain a little bit about how this process will play out. So they're going to come and present today their recommendations. You'll have a chance to ask them questions about their recommendations, and it's at next week's meeting we're going to, at next week's meeting we're going to have the actual groups that are funded. They will be coming in to talk about what their organizations do and why they think they should get whatever amount they're asking for, and then we'll also have a chance to buy for each group. There will be a motion where we'll vote on the funding for that specific group. So today we're not doing any voting or anything like that. We're just hearing their presentation. You can ask them questions, and you'll be able to next week either vote in favor of whatever the recommendation is, or if you can vote no on whatever the recommendation, or you can vote that they don't receive any funding. And if you don't vote in favor and you don't vote that they receive any funding, that they don't receive any funding, then there'll be another process wherein another recommendation could be brought before the group. And then it all culminates in a final resolution with all of the recommendations for every group wherein we vote on that final resolution. So that's kind of how the process plays out. Definitely, if you have questions about that, reach out to me, or you can ask right now even if you have questions about that. If not, we're going to turn it over to the Appropriations Committee. And again, we want to thank them because they've been doing a lot of work. This is a big task they've taken on, so I really want to appreciate them and their hard work. Actually, I'll just go ahead and give you a round of applause. We really do appreciate it. So they're going to present, and we'll have a little time for questions. While this is going on, President Scorton might come in at any given moment, and when he does, we'll pause this discussion, yield the floor to him, and then if there's still time on the clock, when he comes, we'll come back to them after that. Okay. Thank you.
I'm Ian Flohr. I'm a member of the Appropriations Committee and standing in for Bill Krause at the moment. So the GPSA, just to give you some background, basically is a committee which reviews guideline-funded groups, which is any group which applies for more than 50% of students and funding. And this relates to organizations which are run by students for the students. So this cycle that we're dealing with now is a two-year cycle. And once we put forward our recommendations, then they need to be approved by the Board of Trustees. The fee that we assign needs to be a whole dollar amount, and it needs to be at least 35% of that to go towards the GPSA entity. As for the previous activity fee, there has been growth in that activity fee, slightly exceeding inflation. So that's something to consider.
But as you guys can see this year, this is our rundown total, all the groups. We're going to go through each group individually, so if you have questions, please wait until we get to that group. Each reviewer who's exactly will have it on file. But the total recommended $81 would be the exact same fee that we discussed the last time. So this can just be one under our recommendation.
First group, Cornell Athletics, currently, they in the past have received $7 out of our activity fee. They requested the same, and we recommend the same $7. For your $7, you get the free Big Red Sports Pass, which gets you into any sport except for men's ice hockey. an interesting mix of graduate students that also get spouses and children. Approximately 30% of Cornell students, according to the GPSA survey, have gone to Cornell Athletics events. We don't have numbers on spouses and children either. In addition to the access to that, you do get $5 off men's ice hockey tickets, and we also get 250 reserved ice hockey ticket season passes. And you are not required to wait more than 4 hours in the line. If you're peak, undergrads can wait double and triple that. So due to the great use of benefits and the relatively good deal, you attend one sporting event or get close to one men's ice hockey game, and you almost are completely reimbursed that $7 in your fee. We recommend the same $7 funding for Cornell Athletics. Big Red Barn. Big Red Barn is currently at $8 and have requested up to $15. They have kind of stages of planning that will, depending on the level of funding you give them, allow them to complete. Given kind of all the money rundown and the overall picture, we're right now suggesting that we raise their fee to $11.75. The Big Red Barn is having to go through some major infrastructure construction this summer and will have to be closed. They will still, however, be provided for TGIF. I believe on Willard Stray Hall, kind of an outdoor venue, and they're doing their best to accommodate graduate students. But due to an increased use of the barn by graduate student groups, it's actually less available to be booked for private events. So that funding is actually, or that source of income for the Big Red Barn is actually decreased. Additionally, because of the byline funding appendix recommendation by GPSA that they must provide a hot food item once a month, that's coming up to be several thousand dollars that basically is almost the deficit they've run in this last year. The graduate school covered the deficit for them, but we think they're providing incredibly valuable service to graduate students. There was record attendance at the first TGIF this fall, as many of us waiting in the beer line might remember. Over 700 students swiped in, and we all know that's just swiping. Let alone how many people might have actually been there. So this is, that was 10%, put in perspective, that's about 10% of the entire graduate population was in one place, one Friday. This is a really highly utilized source by graduate students, increasing use by graduate student groups, and we think that it's, you know, a vital thing for our campus. So we're recommending an increase in funding to $11.75. Cornell Cinema. In the past few years, they've been receiving $11.05 per month. They requested the same amount. We are actually recommending a decrease to $10.05. In the previous recommendation report, it was advised that this might have been a saturated amount for them coming from the graduate students, and that they were spending money in areas like marketing that wasn't quite in line with other byline-funded groups. Upon reviewing their attendance, only in that GPSA survey that came out 2 years ago, only 24% of graduate students reported using the cinema, and of that, over 70% reported using it less than 3 times. So if I go to the Cornell Cinema once, I'm currently paying $5 for a ticket, $11 subsidy. I pay for a $16 movie. Basically, the math doesn't start working out for that subsidy until you're going 4, 5, or 6 times, which graduate students simply aren't doing. Of the Cornell Cinema attendance, their estimates give us that there's approximately 24 to 30 graduates attending. So that's also, we're not anyway a majority, and we are currently at their requested amount, giving them more money than, say, the undergraduates who are attending in a higher percentage. Due to this lack of attendance, while requesting a significant portion of the activity fee, we recommend lowering it to $10.05. We feel this is a financial burden they can cope with, and it's still allowing the subsidy of an arts program. GPSA, you also have the right to vote on ticket prices as according to their appendix. And we suggest that you so currently prices for undergraduates are $5.50, our ticket prices are $5. We actually recommend that you increase, would allow an increase of 50 cents to the ticket price. So that burden of subsidizing Cornell Cinema is shifted to those graduate students who are attending more than the general graduate student population, which 76% are not utilizing.
Point of information, I'm so sorry to interrupt. I checked, and I believe that they would have to ask for that increase, but that might be something that comes up in their presentation.
This is all just a recommendation.
Yes, no, I understand.
Throw that out there to consider in case they do ask.
Just one more note, that the appendices used to be that financial groups are available online, so you can do them and see what is within your power.
Mm-hmm.
But Liz is right, it would be mandatory. Only if they ask for it. Next up is the Concert Commission. They requested the same level of funding, $575, and we met it. We think that's a good approximation of what they're doing. We didn't find anything wrong with what they were doing in the past. In fact, we thought they've been doing very good service. Student tickets are still heavily discounted compared to the high demand for the act that we've been getting. I mean, by what you think of them, Kesha and Bob Dylan and the big guests, they were big names. and they're usually less than $20, which is well less than you pay for those concerts. There's also three concerts put on, notably the one at orientation. They're not expecting an increase, and we didn't find the type of things in there that were, it's reasonable. All of their costs are reasonable. Their costs are marketing, their costs are advertising. And again, it's cheaper, and so we met their allocation. Next up is the CUEMS. Hopefully, you've never had to deal with this. Service personally, but it's there. It's Cornell's emergency EMT service for the entire community. Even grad students and undergrad students alike, and visitors, even everyone. Obviously, it's true that visitors don't pay into it, but this is a service that Cornell provides. That's, this is when people visit us, when people come to Cornell, this is what we provide. There's no charge to patients whatsoever, and this is just—it's a very small amount of their total operating budget. This is just what they request for the graduate student share, and again, they didn't request an increase, it's $1.80. They have a multitude of other funding. They were very open with us about what they use for which funding, where they're asking for more revenue, like from the SA, for example, they're not asking more for us. And so we agreed to this recommendation.
So the next one is CUPB is an organization that organizes a lot of seminars or talks around campus. In the past, they've had John Stewart, Bill Grover. Most of their events are well attended. They have like, very good reviews. They're asking only for $3.50, so that's something that we can subsidize. There's no increase in allocation, and so we recommend that we leave it as it is.
And also the GPSA, I think, I don't know if you feel bad, but for the budget, there have been some increases in expenses just due to formation of new committees and specific events. This has resulted in the budget exceeding the allocation, with that being 23 cents per student. But having said that, there has been a rollover running forward, which would be sufficient to support the GPSA for 1 year. So what we feel is that our recommendation would satisfy the budget amount and reduce the rollover, which means a reduction in, well, means we don't need to increase the activity fee unnecessarily. For the GPSTV, I think that most people are familiar with some of their events, such as Grad Ball, Grad Night Out, various other activities. There are also wellness events, cultural events, and family-oriented events. They have proposed increasing the number and variety of events that they're going to provide, and that will result in an increase in cost. So they had requested $3, which is a $1 increase from their current allocation. And we feel that they do serve specifically the grad students community, so we have recommended that increase.
I think historically one thing was last year also they requested for more, and we said like, okay, you're a new group, we want to test it out, and they kind of lived up to their expectations, and that's why there's further increase in the amount that they get. The next is the International Student Board. They have these events that raise international awareness around Cornell campus. Like they have like World Cup screenings. They have special mixers for international students all around campus. Currently, they are also an umbrella organization that funds groups for international students. So basically, if there's an international student group that is focused on China, they would also subsidize even costs for their event. One thing that we've noticed among them is that they are acting more as a funding agency, so they're acting in principle like the GPSAFC. They're providing more funding towards international student groups, but only 5 to 10% of this income that they're providing goes towards GPSAFC funded groups, which means that not a lot of money is being directed towards graduate student events. There's a catch here, however, that even though there's some groups that are undergrad funded, a lot of international students do go to the undergrad event because there's always mixing between international students. We do feel that they need to organize more events rather than function just as a funding agency because that beats the purpose. And we try to cut it by an amount that it would not affect their funding, but put it in line with what kind of service they're offering to the grad students and their production trophy. So the other one is orientation. This is funny. So each one of us ends up paying $1 a year for orientation. So it's the official welcome for all new graduate students. They have all resource fair receptions and campus tours, etc. They've been trying to include the GPSA and GPSTD more. Like I think Monia gave us talk this time at the orientation, and they've been trying to improve more, have more collaboration with the GPSA. They also want to make it more inclusive, so in the sense that the senior graduate students also tend to benefit from that. In the sense that if they have a mixer, they'll have senior graduate students come, so there can be an interaction between senior and new students. And that's something that we've suggested, and they said they'll try to implement it if possible. They've not asked for an increase in allocation, and I think they've asked for us to fund that. Oh, that's me. So the next one is club insurance, which is basically, it provides all the boards from protection. It allows groups on campus to function without which you can't function. There are many other protections that are offered by this. There's really no way that we cannot fund them. If you don't fund them, no other organization will function. So we recommend them to be a status quo.
It's also a number that's not, like, you can't lower any more than we can. Not effectively. I mean, you take up the purchase if you want to.
And that's our run now.
You want to take questions?
GPSAFC's funding should be at 35% of the total amount. But last time, because we did offer some amount of money for slow play programming board, and they didn't accept it, so that money was transferred to the GPSAFC.
Because it was last minute, you have to approve the budget within the new year, so a couple of bucks left over, but you minimally 35%. So sort of artificial inflation due to that, so maybe that's the budget. It does add up to 81.
So, what necessarily, this is a general question, keeping it necessarily like right at inflation as far as like, that was for me kind of continuing to try to just necessarily maintain instead of enhance. So something, for example, like the Big Red Barn, which majority is the graduate student resource on campus, something like that could possibly, you know, we could necessarily enhance instead of, you know, changing 8-track CD players, you know, because, you know, going with inflation is okay, we will update, but not necessarily to a significant enhancement. What will be the argument against funding the full?
We're not trying to necessarily go at the rate of inflation. It's sort of an interesting point. We're saying that, yes, the fee has been increasing at the rate of inflation. I think given graduate student stipends, given a decreased funding on that front, and given just a simple, very personal, detailed evaluation of each group, our recommendations aren't to create a number at the end of the day that's like, oh, let's shovel the numbers around to what equals that. We reviewed each case. Our recommendation is just what we truly think each group can function with and reflect the needs of the graduate students. And at the end of the day, I think it is important that this is cash out of our pockets to evaluate the needs of every graduate student on campus. I mean, a lot of us, I think, don't utilize all these resources. So the idea of keeping it at any set amount wasn't our goal, but the idea of being fiscally conscious of what are already strapped graduate students' budgets is also, I think, a need of this committee. So,
to continue with that, basically with the saying, if anyone that, yeah, if the value is staying the same, that's because of the reduction in the cost of we're not having to pay for float days. But the issue, we are getting more from our work, we're able to assign additional money to other groups. So value would stay the same, but it's reassigned within this. So the figure is on the 11:55 when we sat down with the person who runs the figure on and figured out that that assignment was going to be for 2 years. They hadn't realized that that was going to be assignment for 2 years, so we could actually reduce it to 11:55 and still achieve what they would say infrastructural improvements and so on. So I think if there was some reason for us to actually, I think the value or our activity could go up if we felt like what we were getting for it was going to be worthwhile.
And within a 2 year period, a lot of some of these improvements at the bigger barn are something for like a 5 year track, but this is a 2 year funding cycle.
And we aren't just leaving it the same because, like, I understand the question about do we want to keep the ventilation? Sometimes you really just want better things to get what you pay for. But we think this is not just the same anyone, this is a better anyone. We think it's going towards things that are students are using more, like we have our, you know, point that you're a better purpose than you are getting better value.
Yeah, I was wondering about the cinema. What's the rationale behind funding of the total funding for something that's so slowly
expensive? You're saying why we're funding it, period?
Well, not period. I understand but I mean, the way you presented it was working very well.
It's not particularly well attended. 24% actually for graduate students because we're all holed up in our labs or libraries, and that's actually not terrible. But when you look at it as all the fees, $11 is a lot to ask for 24% attendance. We are pretty interested in using financial documents to like look at their operating budget and look at this, and I will just say I don't know if they will continue to exist if we funded them a whole lot less. But at the same time, we're trying to meet the needs of graduate students, and I don't really think they are. And I think the thing is for that $11 too, that's a pure subsidy, as in we don't get, in theory, there's not maybe that lower ticket price associated, but it's not like, you know, bigger sports pass where you're paying $7 and you have the free access. The $11 is just $11 to them, and you're still paying the stage time. So it was a delicate balance where I will tell you we will probably have some very heated and passionate discussion from our representatives next week about the cinema. I reviewed this very carefully. This is my specific thing, and that's the number that at the end of the day I felt okay with. In the meeting with them, and the concern is, okay, if we're going to keep asking for $7, you need to be actively bringing this source, this free resource to graduate students' attention a little bit better. If you do sign up, it's an email, you don't pay for it, though. You pay for it already through your activity fee. And we did point out that it is a little hard, especially for some of the graduate students who've been here however many years, but did I met up in their course pass this year. As a new student, they do a very good job of marketing on that list. But we brought up the concern of recurring students. So that's kind of on them in terms of marketing, but this is a source that's for all of us. You did not pay for it, you do sign up for it. It gets you on an email list, which will remind you when there's big athletic events, and it just makes your ID card or your ID when you sign if you're signed up. So
there's no way that it's like an automatic on your card.
We encouraged that. I don't know if it'll happen.
Yeah, right. Actually, he said a lot of it has to do with privacy laws without the right to email with Cornell. Why email was served like that? So to email all the people, then you have to kind of sign up for that for these friend letters purposes. A lot of it was about the email. They want your permission to.
Like they can't sign you off without your permission. In a good way, even though we all want to not have you all sign up and opt out, it's always better than not going to get that. Most important, we have to opt in.
So that's something we can communicate to them.
Yeah.
We can let them know that why don't you sign up and get them out when we require them.
We did bring it up, and they definitely said that they would try to bring up better awareness, download listers, and that kind of thing.
I was wondering if you could elaborate on the big red barn I noticed actually you guys didn't quite fund them as much. Like why,
So they're at $8. They're requesting up to 15.
Mm-hmm.
We're giving them 11.75. Their actual request said at least 11 to 15. Partly because Bill Corringer just said, you could ask the world from us to the big red barn and we know we're going to fund you. So it came high. So that was part of that.
Okay.
The number wasn't, we didn't do full stuff for them. What they did was they requested, if you give us this much money, we'll do this. If you give us this much money, we'll do this. And if you give us 15, we'll do this. There were three stages. They actually said, like, they laid out the three priorities. And they said, you know, if you give us more money, I'm not going to do anything unless it reaches this threshold. If you give us more than $11.95, it's too much unless it reaches this, you know, $14 threshold, and then $15 a lot. They asked for it in three separate things. And so, you know, $11.95 funds these things, which
The biggest thing is the Big Red Barn did run a deficit this last year in part due to the requirement of the hot food, which we asked the GTSA to like potentially remove at least for 2 years on the violence funding. Partly because they're going through this kind of infrastructure change, we'd rather have them divert those funds and having to host TGIF in Willard Strait or outside Willard Strait over the summer and that kind of thing. And the 11.5 is very much like one of those benchmarks they get for improvement and sustainability. And that's kind of, once again, we're balancing the idea of like how much can we charge graduate students from this activity fee versus the benefits they're getting.
And I think it's important to mention that the infrastructural improvements are a wonderful thing, because if we increase our assignment, then now to the value which will accommodate the infrastructure change. Now they don't necessarily need that much for afterwards, but that's why we gave them, or we think we should give them the option to relieve the cost for that time.
Would also speed up the rate at which they distribute beer on Friday.
I can address that. I would say I did bring that up actually, and it's just having crazy staffing issues this year. She said it was particularly kind of a weird situation, and also the food issue was one of the reasons our state was moving the exact change line with food, so if we actually do relieve some of that burden, that does increase both the speed and accessibility to beer, which we know is kind of the critical point.
My concern is just leaving the farms for us. I kind of waited to try to change some of the usage of the big red farm. I know the thing is, not to use the time to comply with you for the statistic of 750 students. It's kind of tapering off, so it's not very satisfying. And I described it, you know, the big red farm and it's pretty chilly night. It's saying that it's really, really quiet with students. And kind of, you know, removing that after the
What we did propose to them was that they coordinate with other groups who might want to reach out to the graduate community, and they would then provide food on certain occasions. So it wasn't a requirement for them to provide food, but to provide another way to still achieve that.
And this is for the 2-year funding cycle. So we're saying, given this kind of crazy amount of infrastructural changes we're going to have to undergo and where the money's going, to write it in line for this funding cycle to remove that requirement.
It's possible.
That is an issue with attendance.
Yeah.
These are our recommendations.
Hi, I was curious as to why there's such a difference between the 2020 required regular dates for the total non-UB safety. Is there a specific event plan like a $3 increase from their request and recommendation?
That's probably the slope day carryover we're saying from. So slope day always receive over the two.
They recommended $3.50 last night, and that's the amount difference that you would probably be seeing over there.
So when the slope day money did not get approved last year, it was very late in the byline funding cycle, so those money had to go somewhere and get approved. Given that SC has to receive them at minimum 35%, and then it's divvied out kind of to the mass groups that apply, that's where that money was kind of put. That's the discrepancy, I believe you're saying. Since Flip State did not decide to go through the process of becoming a byline funding group again, it was not an issue this upcoming funding cycle.
And there's more information about that Flip State process that Nicole put on the website. If you go to cornelltfa.com and then under the about, where it breaks down the last year's appropriations, there's a blurb about the process.
Basically, what happened is we have recommended to give them 350 in the last funding cycle. There was a lot of debate. They didn't request 350 as they were, and they said that if they got only 350, they would want to charge ticket fees to have residents enter. And so we wrote essentially into the requirements for byline funding, they have to not charge residents. So they had the option of either not accepting byline funding or taking $3.50 and having free admission to grad students, and they chose not to take the funding because of when they made that decision, that money was rolled into the GCSA funding for the last 2 years.
This is a general recommendation. So with Big Red Barnes supplying like the hot food stuff like that, are they under the same restrictions that they have to use Cornell Catering?
They have a special deal with Cornell Dining.
Okay.
But we actually had a pretty lengthy discussion with her about how they have, when they were like founded, they have negotiated certain deals, but they are under some limitations still. Like she gets a really good deal on those salty snacks that go to the river here, so she works through Cornell Dining, not Cornell Catering, and they get the big bulk deals and stuff, and so she's had that worked out. There's also some difference, like with pizza, because she knows the hot foods she can plan out months in advance. She can put in orders to Cornell Dining, which is cheaper than catering. Most places don't have the ability to do that, but they don't have a regular schedule with enough food orders. And then there's a whole lot of restrictions on what kind of food you can bring in and not special events. And if like a special international group hosting special international food events, they can bring in their own food. But so there's much requirements. So in short, they're still subject to some of the Cornell Dining rules, but they have their own little filing partners. The salty snacks are not going anywhere. We're talking about the like hot dogs that came at Oktoberfest or that kind of the hot
special
item.
They won't be mandatory.
But that was literally, if you look at the budget, one of the almost the amount of the deficit they were running from this year since that was sort of put on them, and then countered by the loss of revenue from increased use by graduate students.
So, I really thank you for all of your hard work on this, and the group will probably be coming, not probably, they will be coming next week, and you can ask them more of these distinct questions about. So where is the threshold for the espresso machine in the Big Red Barn, those sorts of things. What I wanted to ask really quickly is kind of plug where the appendices are online for the group so that if they want to go dig in the weeds for this.
You can just, I'm not gonna lie, I find it by Googling Cornell Byline Funded Organization. GPSA, it's the second
one
on there. That's, I'm not
going to
lie, that's how I find it.
I'll figure it out and try to send it out.
That's how we all found it this week. It's all on the internet in terms
you
of
can,
groups.
You can send it to you if you want.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Okay. They're the strings that we as you guys, the whole thing is attached to our.
Yes.
It's all posted online, and so is the amount that each group currently, or when this passes, how much each group gets is also posted online.
Thank you. Okay, so while we're waiting for President Scorton, we're going to quickly transition and we're going to go to our election of new voting members. So we have a few voting members that are no longer going to be able to serve. Chelsea Morris, Dana Westgren is traveling, I guess, a lot for her program. And then Maggie Zhao is a new graduate student. And as she's getting adjusted to her program, finds that she won't be able to serve in this capacity. So the way this works is that when a specific seat is vacant in the year, it's open as an at-large seat. So that means that
anyone to be nominated for one of these seats. And so we'll do each seat separately. We'll take nominations, and if there are more than one, if there's more than one nomination, we'll allow each member to speak, and then we'll do a secret ballot. And these votes are open for field representatives and also voting members. So again, field representatives and voting members can take part in this vote. And we're going to open up three different at-large seats so that if one person doesn't win in the first seat, that they have a chance to win in other seats. We'll do each one, have the results come back, and then do nominations for the second seat so that, again, if someone loses in the first election, they can still have a chance to get one of the other seats. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and open up for nominations now. Now, you can nominate yourself, or you can nominate someone else. So yeah, we'll open up right now for nominations. And I'm sorry, I can't read your top.
But I'm not nominating myself. I'm nominating this lovely woman in front of me.
Okay, thank you. Do you accept? Okay. So Franny.
Is it okay if I just put Franny?
Franny G. Okay. And are there any other nominations, Matt?
I'd like to nominate William Nicholson.
Okay, William Nicholson. Chavez.
I'd like to nominate Sid Sinha. S-I-G-G-H-A-R-T-H-A. Last name S-I-N-H-A.
And Sid, do you accept?
I won't think so. Just chat.
I may ask our council for a clarification. Do they have to be here? Do you know? Or?
In the past, no, they have not had to be present.
Okay, but you verify.
They accepted the nomination.
Yeah, well,
okay, you verify. Well,
exactly.
Yeah, no, I have a confirmation. He's just in the lab.
Okay, so we have it on Chavez's word that he does accept. Okay, are there any other nominations? Okay, Claire, do you accept? And Claire, how do you pronounce your last name? Claire Zollner. Okay, accept. And then, I'm sorry. Ian Small, do you accept? Okay. Are there any other nominations? Okay, so Sid. Oh, I'm sorry. You can nominate yourself, yes. Okay, and you are Kenneth. Kenneth and your last name, sorry, Yancey. Okay. So, I'm sorry, I'm missing people. Yes. I'm sorry? Christy, and what's your last name, Christy? Okay. Okay. Do you accept? Okay. Are there any other nominations? And so, again, since we have three different seats, so if people don't win in this round, you'll have a chance to submit your nomination again for the next seat. So since there's more than one, we're going to give 1 minute to each of you to tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll have a secret ballot. So, sure.
So I just want to emphasize that this is a really great opportunity for you to kind of really take part in the DPSA. One of the big things is that attending meetings is kind of your number one priority. And then also voting on resolutions. Those are the main powers of the voting members.
Thank you. So, Franny. Thank you, Franny. William Nicholson?
I'm Will. I'm a third-year PhD student. I'm involved in the department, but I'd like to be more involved in that. And I also like to attend to work with you, but I'm a student.
Okay, we'll have Let's see, one or two more, and then we're going to pause our discussion because we see President Scorton's with us. So we'll take one more while he's getting settled in. So, Sita, did I pronounce that correctly? Okay. So we'll forego that one. So we'll take one more, Claire. Okay, thank you, Claire. We're going to pause this, and please help me in welcoming. We're so pleased to have with us today President Scorton. He comes to visit. He's been coming to visit the Assembly about once a semester, and we really appreciate him taking out time from his schedule to come speak with us. So we have a number of questions that were submitted ahead of time, so I will be calling on you if you had a question that you submitted, and we'll also leave some time at the end to take questions from the floor, so even if you didn't submit a question ahead of time, we'll try to leave a little bit of time for that. So, again, please help me in welcoming President Scorton.
I apologize for being late. I'm trying to be punctual. I'm at a very luscious, raucous faculty meeting, and I finally got away from it by saying I'd much rather interact with the GPSA than with all of you. I'm not sure if they bought it, but I figured out it was. So thanks a lot for having me here. I appreciate it. And I did have a chance to look a little bit at the questions beforehand, but I'm glad to have you ask me whatever you want. I'm once again, it's hard to be starting by 8 minutes late. I can say go to play 7. That's good for you. Or I can get out of your way soon. So what do you want to talk about?
So Christine, you had a question concerning the endowment.
Okay. So the recent report on endowment shows that we're at almost pre-recession levels, since we're now at $5.7 billion, where our pre-recession high was $5.8 billion. And my question is, does this change any future plans about construction at Cornell? And the GPSA is particularly interested in how this would apply to the residents at Maplewood and the possibility of having a graduate student center in the future.
So it's very clear that the graduate student population has wanted and needed and deserved an upgrade in the center. But I always try to be honest when I come here. The state of the endowment is not really relevant to this question. Let me explain to you why. It's a very reasonable question. The way buildings are financed at universities, including University, is by one or two or three mechanisms, depending on the kind of school. In every college and university, there are campus alumni. Some construction projects are done through fundraising. And Farman Hall has been built for the communities, and Gates Hall for CIS were funded entirely through philanthropy. The second, which you're referring to, is a very reasonable question, is bonding. Selling bonds, tax-exempt, usually tax-exempt bonds, over that get paid back with a certain level of interest over 10, 20, 30 years. And the university quadrupled its debt in the years leading up to the recession. So when the recession hit, we had about $2 billion of debt. And the university had a reduction in one of the rating agencies of our bond rating, which affects the interest we pay. Especially grad students will understand better than I do. And we're still very much heavily leveraged and not in a position yet to sell tax exempt bonds more. The endowment itself, the strength of the endowment, is an asset that when you calculate ratios to decide whether further debt would decrease your bond rating and increase the cost of borrowing, the most useful, commonly used ratio, forgive me for drilling down on this, but you guys are advanced, is it expendable resources to debt ratio? And is debt the denominator of the figure? What is it on salt and American schools and some great expansion? We borrow a lot of money for our building. And the expendable resources have to do with those things, cash that can be applied to pay that back. The endowment is off the table in that regard, because the endowment is made up of donations by donors, contributors, almost entirely for restricted purposes, like a graduate fellowship, undergraduate scholarships, faculty professorships, that cannot be repurposed to build a building. It is true that some generous people will give money to be used to build a building that the requirement pays for building. But the endowment itself that's put there for long-term use is almost entirely made up of these rich restricted donations. So that doesn't mean that we can never do anything about the graduate center. It means we have to find another way to do it. Eventually, the university will reduce the amount of debt so that it's even on potential to be deleveraged and possible again to borrow money. That day will come. But I know that Dean Newton and others are interested over a longer period of time than with the option, finding a way to make progress on the whole GPCI set of activities. But there will be some constraints at this time. And the good news is that we held the line on borrowing since that time, since the recession. So as time goes on, there will be less debt, the asset will still be large, and so we'll be in a position again to borrow money to do that. And there's a lot of projects that were halted. This is one of them, but there were many, many others that were halted at the time. And you have to blame me for that, because I was unwilling to change the future borrowing environment for the university by continuing to borrow more. So I'm sorry not to give you better news in that regard, but that's the sort of set of facts. And I think, once again, the university can maintain the discipline to hold the line on new borrowing, as we certainly pay down debt to the pair, they'll be in a position to do projects based on borrowing. I don't know if Dean, if you want to add anything, you're comfortable with that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So thanks.
It's a very, very important
question. Thank you. Then back to Chin. I actually have two questions. One is related to diversity. I was wondering if you could talk about how the effectiveness of enforcing initiatives being measured, and how is the university going about determining whether the campus environment is actually promoting diversity in the sense of, you know, people of diverse backgrounds are feeling at home here rather than just looking at the, you know, aspect or gender or sexual orientation composite of those of us. And my second question is also related to the financial state.
I want to thank you for bringing up this discussion. It's not the way to move forward. The university is more diverse than the matter of course. Just as one indicated that the freshman class of 2017 undergrads, and you may be turning back on some of the other things, is the most diverse freshman class in history as measured by people who consider themselves people of color and national students of the American students. And so that compositional diversity, as I stated in the investigations, is definitely going in the direction that I think is important to the university is more reflective of the world. But the big challenge, the more blunt and newer, is are we going to make sure that people will succeed and feel comfortable? Will we feel safe in this situation? And it's a big challenge for us in American Charters. One of the things I focus on when I say the university speech the trustees on Monday. It's a very, very important question. When I was president of the University of Iowa, the way that we approach university issues is to have a so-called chief diversity officer. I personally reported to me as president, and there's a certain way of understanding of the primacy of diversity concerns. When there were problems, and this person said, that is the question. When there were problems in certain areas, sometimes other leaders in the university would say, well, you know, we have a chief diversity officer. Why isn't that person responsible? And so I've been experiencing that here with the development of this sort of inverse approach, where the Board of Trustees holds me responsible for certain goals. I hold the two goals, the one that the medical policy will be in this accountable, they hold the team responsible. And they develop, I think the number is 150 years, within a few of the number of initiatives. They're not all compositional diversity initiatives. They're not. They also include achievement, inclusion, inclusion. And we have decided to make those things transparent over the community. So I don't actually have any chance to look at the website and see. But every single one is out there. The first year's assessment, how successful they were, are out there. And all those assessments are trying to take us. Not all of them are completely satisfied in that fashion. But there is an assessment of every single one. And so the best thing that I can say is that I'm hoping that by making it transparent, the community, and by the community, I mean with respect, not just the elected representative of GPSA, SAE, or the faculty senate, go ahead with for sure, but also rank and file students, faculty, staff who are not part of the community, who will look at it and write it and say, I don't buy this as a measure of success. But that being successful, what I think the environment is not inclusive in this or that area. And so it's an experiment. I think it's a fair way to experiment. And the best thing that you can do is to challenge it by looking at it. I don't need to see it collectively. And let us know that I need to have more of me on the board to be heard in the occasion or whatever it might be. It's a very sincere, genuine attempt to be transparent and to make sure that everybody is responsible for the composition of this, but all the leaders have to choose among the data, including achievements, to make sure that we're delivering whatever the services are, and not just the students, but the employees as well. So I would say it's too early to know that this whole approach is successful. They're running in 5 to 10 years, you know, to the goal. The graduation rate, completion rate, replacement rate, performance students is so astronomically high that that's not going to change very much. But it's what people feel like, it's how they believe the comfort level is to actually feel like a part of their community, not just to be called part of the community, and also how they treat each other, the choices that we make, whether that set of areas can be changed by these coaches. Remains to be seen. The experiment will be a failure, in my eyes, if the community doesn't look at that stuff that's put out there in the web and react to it. Not only criticizing the things that appear not to be optimal, but also reinforcing the things that we look here to be going in the right direction so we can more of those things. So I have to sort of balance it back in there. So we can spend some time. That's how we're going to do it. That's how we're going to do it. And once again, not every variable is a quantitative variable, but just like the research doing social sciences, not every bit of research that we do is based on quantitative assessment. So help us take a look at it, criticize and propose these things for what it is. I'm sorry, what was the second question?
Well, thank you very much. I'm also a part of the Society for Asian American American Heritage. Certainly. My second question is also related to the financial status of the university. How would you describe where we are at financially? Are we able to, this university, to kind of be able to alleviate some of the staffing shortages that were caused by the recession? What has the cumulative effect of recession, budget sequestration, and the next largest source of revenue is net tuition.
The next legislation that we do is research funding is funded by the academic staff students. The next largest part is the payoff and rebound. That's by the way, this is about 20% of the organization, about 18% of the organization, about 70% from the very cost of research, about 10% from the payoff and rebound earnings that your colleagues have talked before. And then, according to the direct gifts that we said, they're about 5%. And then you can say that you're 5%. And so, what changed at the recession? What changed at the recession was a downtrend because of the market. I mentioned to you about 10% of our operating costs in the market, and it shrunk about 26%. And so you can do that calculation. And you see that that was a few points. The other thing is that because of the borrowing, in our response to your colleague's question, we have those debt payments, so called debt service, interest, that were large, much larger than we were working or quite a bit of that. So there was an imbalance where the expenditure burden was not going to be under the revenue. And so in order to bring this first step together, the so called debt service, I decided for 1 year to hold all raises. I decided that we should stop construction except for that support of the state of New York, which is the third area that I didn't answer Christine's question. The state of the state school, the state based on funding, and the contract colleges here, capital projects would be about the state of university construction fund. I'm sorry, but you can get to the third one. And during that year, we offered the staff retirement incentive program, 100% voluntary, and 431 people decided to take that retirement incentive, which was a gentle way to continue the incentive that we were working for. And it was followed by about half that number of people, about half that number of jobs were eliminated in the paper. So nobody was in the job, we stopped searching for it. And then the last quarter of the reduction was the regulators. So the net effect of that is to reduce the staff workforce by about 9%. And that's a lot. And because of the voluntary retirement incentive was by the person's own choice, so many people left in areas where they lost the incentive. And so there's no doubt in my mind that some areas the staff problem is not enough. If the work, the amount of work has not gone down, there's more students, there's more research, there's more effort. But as a result of not having more money, of slowing down hiring for a while, of slowing down construction, and that's in the case of 100% of the building, for the state's contribution, we are pointing out that the so called all funds of the university plan means that you put all the revenue in the question money. We don't have a lot of extra money beyond that for the question money. But there's some areas in the university that bigger funds, as many as research areas, as many as you were, has not related so much to the university side, but the elevated funds from the outside agency. And some of you work in areas where there is not a lot of student funding, there is something in the almost a symbolic instruction. And so I do recognize that we're going to be able to refresh the staff. We won't be able to do that. But we focus areas where some areas are very disciplined. But we're going to have to realign, as our teacher colleagues put it, realign where things are going on. And very frustrating. Department staff. Department faculty, students, and staff support, which all of us do. And so that's sort of really what happened. The good news is that we're no longer in that business, and we all have a budget. The good news is that we have a discipline to not buy more money, so that in the future generations, we'll be paying off those debts to spend it in our own operating model. A little tiny bit of that actually, you know. And revenue is still going up because of the tuition margin. Research of funding Places like Cornell will do better than many of the schools because of that wide variety of the students that are coming up. But many of the industries are under pressure right now. The degree to which tuition is going to be raised is going to be limited. The amount of the money that comes through the tuition of the campus is going to show that the more economically close to campus, the more we should be putting money in that regard. And this university, undergraduate student body, is the most economically close national university. The eighth most economically close among the national universities of the national university. So I'm very worried about whether the 2014 sequestration will occur. If you would ask me 3 months ago, I would say there's no way the Congress is going to get out. But I'm not talking about it. And so far, the sequestration is not affecting research operation. Reimbursement tends to slow down for about another 20 million, and many of the funding, if not all, have decided to not touch existing grants, but to cut back on the new grants. But the most vulnerable population on that is UF, is current research and postdocs climbing in an academic career, industry career, as they start making grants. And so I'm spending my time trying to be an advocate. Really, the people who do not have any deals, they have a lot of allies in Congress. Don't think we don't need investment in the people who are not convinced about the value of research funding. And I believe that over time, most of that people are doing. But I think we're quite a while here. And depending on new undergraduate training, we need to be faced with more media sessions. But people are my undergraduate thinking almost all this right now, including your appointment. And so I still think the future is right to graduate education. But we're going to have some potential necessary times in those areas, ironically, that have had the benefit of excellent funding. That we can depend on that to receive. And so we'll just have to see how it goes. To the extent that truth and work home, society and organizations based on discipline, close-up communities, to the extent that we can be a voice heard with the local, with the representatives that are just locally, it's very, very effective. More effective for students to speak up than for students to speak up. I'm going to continue. But you think that you can end up all of a sudden doing by the time you need to because of the prevention of the line is 24 to the sequestration of the information.
And we have time for one more question. We'll take it from Alice Moore.
So just a question on the model that I'm going to make. It's important to believe that students actually might be in your team. The response is not to be sexual harassment by issued by the university said that one of the goals should be to further develop support and educational programs that you can use as undergraduate students, graduate and professional students, staff and faculty. So far, Cornell has made progress in developing a new orientation program about consent and relationships for undergraduates. In addition, Cornell has established the Respect at Cornell program to educate staff and faculty. Currently, there is no mandatory or voluntary program for graduate students that addresses issues of gender bias and sexual. Almost 40% of Cornell graduate students come from foreign countries with differing cultural norms regarding gender equality and sexual harassment. In addition, many graduate students work in close contact at irregular hours with advisors, postdoctoral scientists, and staff, and are also in employee positions for undergraduates. So the questions are, what current plans are there to educate new graduate students on their rights under Title IX? What current plans are there to train graduate students to identify sexual harassment in the workplace and classroom? And finally, what responsibility and legal obligations do graduate teaching assistants and research assistants have to report incidents of sexual harassment at the university?
It's a great question. What do you want to say? Good question. Why not be that reason? So, it's a very important point. Because of the size of our undergraduate population and the preponderance of that shows that it's further just based on size and other factors. The first things that we've done are oriented toward, in terms of voluntary and mandatory training, so it's important. The faculty and staff request to see this tons of data out there that new grad students are made aware of about what the policies are, and it's your responsibility. I mean, you identify yourself. It's your responsibility to make yourself knowledgeable. And your responsibility as a GPSA to export your colleagues to make yourself knowledgeable about it. That's not an excuse for not developing for the training program. But there are data out there, information out there on the website. And Peter will tell me if this is accurate or not, but I believe that the orientation for new grad students, there was mention made of this stuff, where you go to find out, automation letter 6.4 and so on.
There's mentions of the various policies that have been made, including grievance policies, central services policies, procedures for handling those or for making their complaints. So the idea of policies being in existence, where to find them, how to educate yourself about them, is covered in orientation. You're right, but we don't drill down into every content about every single one in the form of orientation.
So one thing we should follow up on is the is to send to the GPSA leadership what we're trying to do with the links are slated and distributed. But that passivity is the kind of question I think is the problem. So I checked in because I got this question this time, just helpful with the title line coordinators. And they do intend to begin to work this year, deliver it right now, next year, on developing offerings for graduate students. And I believe that includes postdocs, but I'm not 100% sure that. I know it includes graduate students. And so I will be sure in follow up to this that some communication comes to the GPSA leadership from the timeline coordinators, and being able to use those to send that information on the current website. Then what you could do with us, not just you, but anybody through GPSA, is look at the material that's there and give feedback and engage with me. And I will share with the timeline coordinators about what you think that material is out there. Because one of the things that's really helpful for the undergraduate representatives and rank and file in the training, so I can use that term, is that we got some feedback on the things that were offered and find things based on the feedback. So we'll send you this stuff. I'll talk to you about it for you to make sure that some information is gotten to your leaders about what to expect this year. But as we get things for the questions next asked about the campus planning from a different angle, we're all talking about campus planning. And campus planning is complex, and the more various backgrounds of people on campus, as you mentioned, the more complex the process is. So I sorely need your feedback, positive and negative, about the stuff that we can look at. And I appreciate the fact that you brought up the leadership coordinator, because I was aware that the Catalan coordinators were intending to work on this this year. Now I have some information, so it's a great question. And the other reason
President Squirt, I'm sorry, we have one more pre-submitted question from Tim.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for being here.
Yeah.
I had a kind of an open-ended question about the budget policy.
Yeah.
So as I understand it, it operates very much at the level of colleges, and it's not about creating new revenue at all. So I was wondering to what extent do you foresee the new budget model affecting the bottom line of individual departments beginning the next
Well, when you said it's not involved, I'm sorry, you didn't have my question.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't mean to cut you off, sorry. Just one thing you said I didn't quite connect with. The budget model is about revenue and expenditures, both.
Sure.
So what do you mean when you said
it's not about creating revenue.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you're right. The budget model, per se, is about handling the revenues that they come in from layers and mechanisms. So the specific question you're asking is,
to what extent do you foresee it affecting the bottom line of individual departments in the next year? Okay.
So I always think carefully about the words and the questions people ask me. Just as in the past, in any budget model, local decisions will be made about, by faculty, about what courses to offer, what extracurricular activities will be decided by combination of faculty, student academic services, staff, student leadership, or undergraduate, graduate professional. As always, in any budget model, the decisions have to be assessed the big thing about the new budget model is it's a hybrid between a budget model in which money is allocated based on some all-knowing person behind the curtain, which is always has a certain nature to it, that the person will have different biases or lack of knowledge about certain things. So it's obvious that there's problems there. A hybrid with that model and a model called responsibility centered management, in which in the musical Music Man, there's a line, because this is the one that I always get involved in, kind of this way of thinking. There's a line that says, you can have your fill of all the food you bring yourself. And the responsibility center management is sort of in that regard, that there's immediate feedback that you're dependent on your own failure to raise your revenue, but you're also responsible for not exceeding that revenue with expenditures, like the whole university did when we had the expenditure curve going up above the revenue curve. So the three things that the budget model will do will be a hybrid of these areas where people will have more local responsibility, but they'll still be encouraging money allocated by programs. Secondly, there'll be great transparency among the different leaders, which has really been lacking at the university. And then thirdly, we will have to identify, which every entity always should have been doing always, but we didn't do in American higher ed. You were in expansionist mode for decades and decades. My whole career, basically, you were in expansionist mode. There has to be identification of the source of revenue to undertake a new expenditure. And so it's impossible for me to tell you exactly what will happen to hundreds of individual organizations that make up the university. But I don't think that there will be tremendous tremendous changes based on the budget model. So for example, let's look at the parts of the university that are most vulnerable to internal decisions. Those areas that don't have external means of support. So the non-science areas, you heard me talk a lot about the humanities and social sciences, humanities and arts. I don't foresee any change this year or next year in how those things look. It's going to be up to local decisions, but I can't imagine any big substantial changes. I am very worried about science-based programs that are dependent on growth and stability and outside funding, in which there's no reasonable way to expect the university to make up for very substantial losses in external funding. Now, that's always been the case. So if somebody gets a research grant and you hire graduate students, postdocs, professional staff, and the grant goes away, those jobs also go away. And in my day where I had a lot of research funding, I had to preside over the dissolution of a specialized center of research that I ran for years and years and years. That was 11 people's livelihoods. And you're able to find work in the same university for 10 of them, but not for one of them. But those were still the days of general expansion. So I lost my grant, but the person down the hall, so to speak, didn't lose their grant. I am concerned with science areas, because sequestered, 2014 sequester goes into place, that the possibility of other places to go, if one science area goes down, will not be as robust. So I'm more concerned about the outside effect. I'm actually optimistic that over the long run, we'll make a lot better financial decisions at the university based on the new budget model. But it's very unnerving to be in the middle of something, a grad career, an undergrad career, a faculty career, staff career, when all of a sudden the ground rules change. But I think these ground rules are greatly, greatly for the benefit of flexibility and transparency in the university. They just have to be, once again, as an individual development question, it depends on the engagement and involvement of people taking that to transparency. And so, the last time I was here, when the new budget model was just going into effect, a couple months before it did, the spring semester, I wondered what you're doing to have the provost come and meet you. Have done that kind of thing. The provost did this since I was here?
Maybe not. I don't think so. Okay, Nicole said no. Yeah.
So, So I know because I asked him that next day after you guys asked me, what do you mean when you come to see me? Very long. I urge you again to ask him to come by because he's the ultimate person responsible for this. I mean, I'm ultimately responsible for sort of everything, but he's the one who's actually doing it. And he's enormously engaged with the Georgia education. And I urge you, it's obviously your decision, it's your duty to get a little trust to come here and put in the position.
That's
what I heard. It would be great to have
you. Yeah.
I mean, just as a suggestion, something like that.
Thank you.
Thank you, as in Colvin.
No.
I really appreciate this. Once again, I'm sorry that we got ready to start today. If there were some other questions that we didn't get answered and wanted to send to me, tell me, I'll give you an email answer. And then I'll give you the stuff I promised, the email and the stuff. And I'll get it done on coordinators to send to you. What appointments are through here for training and educational outbreaks of risk and so related to Title IX issues, especially in sexual assault.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much. Okay, so we will continue with our. We'll quick continue with, I think we left off on Claire. So,
yeah,
Ian?
So really quick, if you did have any questions that you wanted to ask but we didn't have time for, please send them to gpsa@cornell.edu and we're happy to relay them on, either to President Gordon or to the office that is responsible for that.
Okay, and we're going to move through this election very quickly, so we'll be very efficient. We thank you for staying over. We wanted to make sure we could get to all those questions that were at least submitted ahead of time. So, Ian, yes.
I'm Ian Newell. I'm a 16 year education student in Montana. I think the GPA plays an important role, and I'm involved in the appropriation committee and the GPA finance commission. So, I'd very much like the opportunity to be a voting member.
Okay, thank you. And just one quick note, especially if you're a voting member or field rep, we especially encourage you to stick around for an extra 10 minutes so we can get through this. Okay, Kenneth?
Hi, everyone. I'm a second-year PhD student in biology from environmental engineering. And I'm going to nominate myself because I'd like to see more active role in improving my life. I'm also the third year for the first year of the future, so I think the importance of that can't be overstated. I think that GPA plays a big role in sort of promoting local and professional activity, and I'd really like to be a part of that as a voting member.
Thank you.
I'm Christy Schwartz. I'm a fourth year in the English program, and I'm a teacher on the GPSA. My first year on the program board, and I'm actually a
Thank you. So at this time, I'm sorry. I didn't see that you would come in. Okay, yes.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dave, and I'm the representative for the graduate program in molecular and clinical physiology. I'd like to apologize for my tardiness.
No problem.
And possibly the first time I've literally done the running for it. So, this is my first time at GPSA, and I'd like to thank you for nominating me. I'm really using this opportunity to build upon my previous experience of being a member of the undergraduate program at the University of College, as well as sitting on the board of trustees for the University of College. And really, you are all very good to listen to President Cohen talk about the future of the university, and I'd like to take this opportunity to help contribute to shaping the future. Not only for us, but for every single succeeding leader, and help in drafting the policies to hopefully ensure a bright future for the graduates and community at Cornell University.
Thank you, Sid. Okay, so you should have received, if you're a voting member or field rep, you should have received a few ballots here. We're going to ask you, we're going to give you just a minute here to place. I'm sorry, did you have a question?
No.
Okay. We're going to give you just a minute to place to vote for your first, for the first, for the first, I'm sorry, voting member, and then we'll quickly collect, and then we'll have a chance. If you didn't win in this first round, you can then again nominate yourself, or someone else can nominate you for the second seat and the third seat. So quickly, we'll give you about...
Point of information, is there any way that we can suspend the particular voting policy and do three, just do three names in one round?
Sure, yeah. No one has any objections to that. We can approach it that way. So write down three different names. Yeah, that will be more efficient. Write down three different names, and then we'll collect them all.
And the top three.
So we'll give you 1 minute, and then we'll come around and collect. Okay, April 8th. Okay. Thank you. While they're collecting those, we'll go ahead and do open forum.
I would like to move that we officially welcome and vote in the communications chair. So, all those
okay.
In favor, I suppose, is Elena and Gary being the new communications committee chair.
Okay, Elena and Gary. So,
Alana.
Sorry, so Alana and Gary want to serve as co-chairs. So we'll just go ahead and do a voice vote here. So do you accept, I assume?
And Gary also accepts.
Okay, so we'll take it on your word that's true. Okay, and so we'll just do we'll call it to a vote, and we'll do a voice vote. All those who are in favor of Alana and Gary serving as Alana, what's your last name? Alana, sorry, if I could get your attention. Alana Spaghetti and Gary, what's his last name?
Cho.
Cho, serving as co-chairs of the Communications Committee. And Dana said, can you say aye?
Aye.
And all opposed, no? Okay, so the ayes have it, and... We welcome you. Thank you for that. And then we're going to go, again, we'll do open forum while they're counting the votes so that we can move through quickly here. So is there anyone that would like to speak in open forum? Nicole.
Yeah, so I was going to be in the room, and I'm going to be announcing the conference this coming weekend. I'm actually going to be presenting on strategic planning for graduate students. Thank you. any GPSs are lobbying groups for graduate students, so they're not to stay informed about what are the issues relevant to that grad students. So if you guys have anything that you want to let me know about, or concerns you have, or things you'd like me to ask about, please let me know by email nmg68, and I can do that. I also will be taking copious notes of those sessions that I can attend and writing up a report at the end so you guys can kind of hear about all of the things that we talked about. And I would strongly encourage you to try to attend the regional meeting in the spring, which is again will be possible.
Thank you, Nicole. Yes, Carr.
So one of the things that I'm working with the communication committee on doing is posting to our Facebook, not Facebook, but blog and Facebook notes of the meeting, and then you guys can send out your deals so that you can have like links to things and that sort of thing. I would be happy to do that for this meeting.
Yeah, or I mean, but I don't think there's
any
information on the slide.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, I can.
But whatever you all think is
better. I was thinking for the purpose of like sending out the email, PowerPoint,
yeah,
that's a lot
right.
Longer, so.
Yeah. Jay, we can send out both.
Putting it and plugging it.
And
it was emailed out.
The current level of funds that came out all that funding and the organization descriptions that are attended is online. This is a specific document that emailed out to everybody. It's technically a draft.
Yes. So when the final recommendations are approved, they'll be online. But until then, you can find an email. You can email the team to get it as well. Asma? Anything, these meetings are open to all students, so there shouldn't be anything that we discuss that should be private, but thank you for asking, though.
It's highly encouraged to share what we talk about.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we'll definitely collaborate with you, though, offline to make sure that we figure out something there. Thanks. Anyone else for open forum? Chavez.
So Saturday, November 9th, from 9 to 12, in the Biotech Building, G10, the third annual Renaissance Ball. The theme this year is Great Gatsby. So this year, the theme is Great Gatsby. So come dressed in your 1920s best, okay, and post Halloween, so the front flappers and stuff should be on sale. it starts at 8 p.m. Excuse me. But it's a event that's hosted by a great deal of a large number of students and the student of color, graduate community, as well as diversity offices across the campus. It's open, and it's open for everyone, and they're looking to get
everyone come out this time, expand your network, come out and meet the people for an elegant night of fun. So, and it's co-sponsored by the GTSA FC, as well as the Office of Inclusion and Professional Development and Center for Intercultural Dialogue.
Thank you, Chavez. Yes.
Yeah, so if you go on Facebook and just put in SOC 3rd Annual Renaissance Ball, then they'll have a link. The link is actually greatgatsbycornellgrad.eventbrite.com, and it'll send you it'll send you a link directly to the website that you can purchase the tickets there.
Okay, thank you. And then we're going to announce the outcome of the election. So please help me in congratulating Ian, Sid, and Franny. We look forward to working with you, and for everyone else that was nominated, we look forward to working with you as well. Just a quick announcement, though, before we dismiss here. We will be meeting again next week. We have a lot going on this month with appropriations, so we will be meeting next week and the week following. So please plan to be in attendance. And also, we'll be going to the Big Red Barn after this. We invite you to join us if you have time.
Take advantage of our
online
funded
organization. Yeah. Wait, do we have a motion to...
A motion to adjourn.
Okay.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.